Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, that they're counterproductive, that our academic institutions have been indoctrinating a generation who is incapable of thinking, who have been rendered non-judgmental by political correctness and thus unable to be discriminating, to be discerning, to be moral. And it is the world that we find ourselves in, but it is not the world that God intended for us. And it's the world that he will lash out against upon his return. Good morning, Kirk. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Good. We are. It was an interesting discussion yesterday as we move towards a clearer understanding of where we're headed in terms of world war. I mean, there are so many indications of decline. I think most people recognize that the world as we know it doesn't have much fuel left. And it's so much of what we have come to know is based on faith. In fact, I was talking to John here in the break before the show, and really the problem that, you know, our economy is based on faith. The value of the dollar, for example, it's a faith-based instrument. The credibility of our economy being fiat money, and the central bank manipulating it. In fact, we are now in a credit society. It's all based on faith. And our military, our trust in our military, this serving us to keep us free. We owe them an enormous debt when everywhere around the world they're making bad things worse. The country isn't credible enough anywhere in the world and shouldn't be with its own people to engender faith.
Well, you notice that in 3 weeks, Russia has wiped out more ISIS than we have in 3 years. We've spent trillions. I mean, we have no economy. We're a service economy, which means we don't make anything. We just trade with people. We bring it in from you, we sell it to them. I wouldn't feel very secure based on that. We don't make anything, nothing.
No, well, very little.
Well, we make guns. Take that back. We make very good guns and drones.
Yeah, we make military hardware. We're the best in the world at it. But, you know, when you have an economy, when you have a military, when you have a political infrastructure that's all held up based on faith, it's really no different than a religion. The glue that keeps America together is almost universally a patriotic religion.
Right.
And most people can't imagine that something that has performed in the past, although it's not longer performing, it has performed in the past, will just continue to perform. They can't imagine. It's like when you tell a Christian that the basis of their religion is complete fraud. Like there was an ad at the beginning of this program from SRN. You should sponsor an electronic version of the New Testament for your military. And you go, good God, how could you be further from the truth?
Yeah, give them hope. I mean, give our heroes.
Yeah, the New Testament.
Listen to heroes.
Right. First of all, they're not heroes.
No.
Our military has consistently made us more vulnerable. They made bad situations worse. We would be vastly safer and more secure if we didn't have a military than the one that we have now. And on top of that, half of the Christian New Testament is preposterous. It's letters by a man who admitted that he was a lunatic, that admitted he was demon-possessed, who is contrary to the God who he says inspired him. I mean, you have to be an absolute nincompoop, either ignorant or devoted to blind faith, to cling to those kind of myths.
And it's called Babel.
Yes, it's a Bible based on Babel, which is the thing that God asks us to walk away from if we're going to engage in a relationship with him. And it means with Baal, with and in the Lord, who is Satan. It's why he is associated with, and he's introduced to us by character and association in Yahshayah, and it's why he is associated with Babel, with Babylon. And Christianity just swallowed it whole. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, people used to want to spread the Bible around. They used to give it away free, like the Gideons. These people wanted $25 to give you a little stick that probably cost them 50 cents to make.
Yeah, an audio version.
I mean, come on.
Called Making Merchandise of Men.
Just making merchandising of men. There you have it.
Yeah.
Small scale, but
something that,
nonetheless.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We turn to the book that details the last of the last days. And Zechariah, and the name means remember Yahweh. And it begins with saying that the world's peoples and families shall mourn. Because this is a horrible time. But he is going to, there's one people that won't be mourning. He says, I'm going to pour out of the, on the household of Dod, which means love, on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, which is the only city that he favors in the world. It's the spirit, the city from which reconciliation comes, the city that he's going to return to. You know, if he did everything that was important in that city, everything important in that city, and he is returning to that city, and if he's going to establish his kingdom in that city, how in the hell can there be a Roman Catholic Church with its headquarters in the Vatican, city-state within Rome? How could God be blessing America if his focus has been, continues to be, and will be Jerusalem?
He says not.
Well, of course. It's just so obvious when you read the text. Anyway, from the household of Dod, which means love, it's the actual name of David, and the inhabitants of, and by the way, that's that would be also troubling for Christianity, because when he establishes his millennial kingdom, which they all know is coming, they don't know that it's going to begin on Sukkah after his return on Yom Kippurim, because they don't know he's returning on Yom Kippurim. They don't know that he's establishing it on Sukkah, even though it's obvious. But if he's reestablishing the kingdom of Dod, and he's not capitalizing on the church age and establishing a kingdom based upon the church, Christianity's in a whole world of hurt, aren't they?
Yeah, the old saying down south was, is he really going to come back and embrace the Southern Baptist Church? I don't think so.
Well, yeah, how can you pretend that there's replacement theology when the Torah and prophets are clear and they say that his return shall be predicated on reestablishing the kingdom of Dod? Did Dod write love songs to the Christian New Testament?
I'm sorry, no.
No. Did he ever mention a church?
No.
Did he ever speak of Christianity?
No, not at all.
But didn't he write love songs to the Torah?
Yeah. Unless you call Christianity what it really is, a Babylonian religion, then, you know, that's about the only mention of it in the early part of the Torah.
Correct. So if you're going to build it on the kingdom of Dod, this whole experiment with the church was a complete and utter mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It's being repudiated. It's not being acknowledged. There's no place that it's acknowledged. It's being repudiated. Going right back to the basics. To the man who fell in love with Yahweh and sang the praises of his Torah. So anyway, it says that be the kingdom of Dod, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, concerning the offer to purify and cleanse sin and corruption. So Yahweh, in the midst of this corrupt world, is going to reconcile his relationship with his children by facilitating it. He's going to give them the opportunity to kind of cleanse their eyes of religion and politics and militarism and simply accept him.
Mm-hmm.
Then it says,
the whole time, yeah. Even more so.
Yes, it's been offered the whole time, but what he's going to do is he's going to bring his predictions to a and promises to a close.
Fruition.
And is rather than it happening one at a time here and there with as many as likely with the Gentiles as it is with Israelites, he is going to go directly to Yehuda and Israel, and is going to focus on them and it's pouring out this spirit of acceptance so that they can en masse, in unison, accept him. And that's really what he wants with them, is to have them embrace him in mass at this time. And it shall come to exist on that day, declares Yahweh, that the names of the idols made of the substance of the earth will be banished, ceasing to exist, recalled and proclaimed no longer. If God had many names, doesn't care what you call him, why wouldn't he just say that I'm going to banish the idols? He said the names.
Yeah, as you know, and I know that the name is vitally important to the whole thing, not only because it tells the story, because he has one and only name. He wrote it 7,000 times.
Now, Christians and Muslims will claim, well, they have a monotheistic religion, and they did away with the pagan religious gods, and they did away with all those false gods. He's saying this of the last days, of the last days. This is in the final week of the final year of the seven-year tribulation. And he's saying, at that time, I'm going to do away with the names of the idols. So, today, we have to look at what are the names of the idols today. What are the names of God, the names attributed to God, that could be wiped away today, that would be popular enough for him to give this kind of a prophecy, for to say, the first thing I'm going to do after I pour out the spirit of acceptance on Jerusalem, that I'm going to banish the names of the idols. The names of the idols. So we'd have to look at what names are used in a broad way today. We don't see Zeus used today, do we?
No.
Jupiter?
No.
No, we don't see those names.
But Lord.
What are the names we see? The single most common would be Lord, right?
Followed by Jesus.
Followed by Jesus.
Power.
Followed by Allah. These are the names. Yeah. Christos. Mm-hmm. Amen. Now, Israel is also to blame for the names of the false gods and false idols. In fact, someone just sent me a link to a site that chronicles the Rothschilds' Masonic and occultic influence on the Israeli Supreme Court building. And, it's very real. You look at Washington, D.C., and not only does it mimic in architecture the
Roman
paganness and brutality of Imperial Rome, but it's all laid out in Masonic order.
Mm-hmm.
And the temples and shrines and the like are all of a Masonic design. And Freemasonry, the ultimate god is Satan. It's really prevalent, and when he says he's going to wipe out the names of the false gods, one of them that he's not going to wipe out, one that he's not talking about here is Halal bin Shakar, because virtually no one knows it.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you're walking out the names of the false gods, Kirk, the names that he's got to be wiping out have got to be Jesus, Christ, Allah, and Lord.
Well, we can throw in. I'm sure he's not.
What else could he be talking about?
Pays attention to, but there's Shiva, and Buddha has become a god by the Buddhas that came afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
He was a god. He was born just a man, and there's Holy Ghost.
Yep.
I don't think he cares about Holy Ghost. He has a perfect good name for the other aspect of it, Ruach Kodesh. But
look at the
entity all by itself.
All of that, and look at the. He's talking about made of the substance of the earth. One of the ultimate false idols, a man-made object of worship. I mean, if you want to talk about a man-made object of worship made of the substance of the earth.
Sure.
How about the Vatican? St. Peter's. How about all of the Christian churches, all made of the elements of the earth, all are objects of worship, images of reverence? How about every crucifix, every cross?
Great point. Yeah. Absolutely. All the stones.
And so the name of these buildings, the churches, the name cross, that be obliterated.
Well, you know what pain is, right? Dirt.
The very symbols of religion. Pardon?
I said, you know what pain is? Is it ground up pigment?
What is
dirt.
Now?
It's dirt, paint.
Yeah.
So I'm in all the pictures.
Yes, exactly. Oh yeah, all the pictures. Yeah, they would be. Their paint is yeah, the pigments come out of the earth, ground up dirt, and so yeah, all of those objects of worship that are religious art that were designed to inspire worship and reverence. All to a false god, they'll be recalled and remembered no longer. That's the first act that is required by Yahweh. Their names are gone. Moreover, I will quickly distance and destroy from the world prophets and the intoxicating spirit of uncleanliness and ethical immorality of religious rebellion. And so the second thing, so it's the names associated with all of these objects of worship. Church, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, socialist, secular humanism, all the people that call themselves humanists. And then the next thing is the intoxicating spirit of those who profess to speak for God. So if you're a pastor or priest, a pope, a cardinal, a monk, an imam, if you're someone who professes to be a spokesperson and to deliver an authoritative message, and your message is intoxicating, hateful, arrogant, and repulsive, then you're done.
Yeah, but, you're toast.
God's not going to, you know, this, it's an interesting thing, and free will is required for there to be the choice to love. But there comes a time, according to Yahweh, when the choice will have been made by those who have chosen him and have chosen to ignore him. And at that point, we have all chosen to be free of intoxicating religious and political jargon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it won't exist anymore. So you imagine a time when there will be no false prophets, no religious pontificators, no evangelists, no imams, no priests, no pastors, no monks.
I think it'll be great.
And it's also interesting. Well, I think so too. But it's also interesting that, you know, when he's talking about, particularly about Sheol, Paul, the founder of Christianity and author of half its New Testament, and he's constantly saying of him that he is intoxicating. But he's defining intoxicating here. It's an intoxicating spirit, a spirit that causes people to be unable to exercise good judgment. So when Yahweh uses the term intoxicating in his condemnation of Paul, which he does almost every time he mentions Paul, he talks about an intoxicating nature of the man. Here he's defining the intoxication as being a spiritual and it being immoral, religious rebellion. And the reason I think he uses intoxication to describe this is it impairs judgment. It's if you're constantly indoctrinated.
Yeah. How does one function without the ability to make judgments? I mean, in any walk of life.
Well, not very well. Look at the world today. You know, if you try to engage in business with people today, and you're going to find that a very high percentage of them are incapable of exercising good moral judgment. You know, you watch society as a whole. The reason that there's been an upsurge, as there has been, particularly in the United States, of these mentally ill boys perpetrating mass killings, is that the overall judgment of society has been hugely impaired by political correctness. And so now if you have somebody whose judgment is further impaired by a mental disorder, well, they might have been either isolated from society or been had at least a modicum of good sense. Now you've got most people in society without the ability to be moral, and those who are mentally affected going off the deep end. mean, that's our problem. Our problem is we're manufacturing amoral people. Don't have the ability to exercise good judgment. And to prevent that, this even says, and it shall come to be that anyone who speaks as a prophet again, their father and mother will say to the child that bore them, you shall not live, for indeed you speak lies in the name of Yahweh. And as a father and mother who bore them shall pierce him when he prophesies. They'll know that there is something that is worse than death. You know, false testimony regarding God, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Mormonism. False testimony regarding God, humanism, is far more destructive than death.
You know, I looked up Prophet Naba, and it was interesting. The oldest thing I could find was strange what it said, and then it kind of made sense. It said it's like analogize it to a fruit. Knowledge from the inside of a man is kind of like a seed in the fruit, and it says knowledge is something that is not known by the five senses. And I started thinking about that. I said, you know, for 8 years I've been studying the Torah prophet in Psalms now, and I engage all my five senses to understand this. I read it, you know, I hear it, I see it, I gauge my hands, if you wish, in looking up these things and so forth. So, I mean, everything that I do to understand God is not something unknown, not something that's not known by the five senses, and that's the definition of the prophet. He is talking from this made-up stuff inside, this stuff that's not known.
Yeah.
And God's known.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the word for prophet, is like the use of the word Elohim in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's like the so many Hebrew words that the same word can be in context, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Yahweh spoke through men that were known as Naba. You know, this man that were whose text we're reading, Zechariah. He was a Naba. But the vast preponderance of Naba and 100% of the Nabas today are false. They're claiming to speak as prophets. They're claiming to be, you know, the Pope claims to be inspired by God. They claim to be authorized by God. You know, all of these men claim to be men of God. Not a single one of them is. And the reason that their testimony, their false witness, is more destructive than death, is that there is no penalty in death. You're dead. There's no pain. There's no penalty. There's no punishment.
It's over.
But yeah, it's just over. But if you're leading people away from God, claiming to be speaking for God, as all religious individuals do, there has to be a consequence for causing other souls. You know, your own soul, that's one thing. You're a victim. But when you're perpetrating religion or politics or militarism, then you're influencing other souls negatively, of which there has to be a consequence. The consequence is internal, eternal incarceration.
That's fair.
So they're going to pierce him.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't actually say they're going to kill him. It says they're going to pierce him. Shall pierce him when he prophesizes. To pierce is to cut right to the heart of something, you know, to poke holes in it. Going to pierce him. They're going to poke holes in what that individual is saying. So on that day, everyone who claims to speak on behalf of a god, this is Nabi, prophets who proclaim a spiritual message, will be too ashamed to provide their divine message or their destructive spiritual visions. They will be too ashamed to deceive while dressed in their rich robes and fine cloaks.
I love that passage.
Me too.
I can just see all these guys in their fancy robes and their fish hats.
Yes. You know, there's none that dress up fancier than the Roman Catholics, the Pope and his cardinals and bishops and the like. But, you know, I saw there was one picture of the Pope at, I think it was the National Cathedral in America, which was an ecumenical meeting. And they had the entire front was these head of these religious orders from Hinduism and Buddhism and Islam and the various branches of Christianity and the like. And all of them were up there in their fancy garments looking religious. And you just go, oh, God, their fancy rich robes, which are nothing but filthy rags. But there's come a time where they will be too ashamed finally to speak. It'll be too late for them, too late for those they deceived, but I too love that. So, he will say, I am not a divine messenger or prophet. I am just an individual who serves the realm of mankind. But indeed, from his youth, he has made merchandise of men. Wow. So they'll, you know, all these the guys that are pastors, you know, they're in the service of God.
Oh, yeah.
All the people, the public office, you know, they're a public servant. If you're in the military, you're serving your country. And they'll all of these individuals, they will finally say, okay, yeah, wait a minute, I'm not speaking for God, but I am I'm still a divine messenger, and I'm an individual who, well, I'm not a divine messenger. I'm just an individual who's trying to serve the realm of mankind. Don't hold me accountable. I'm engaged in the service business. And God says, yes, but indeed, from their youth, from their childhood, they have made merchandise of men. That's how he sees religion. You look at that at the Roman Catholic Church and all of its riches. You know, you look at the mega churches today and their riches. You look at the televangelism and the money. And he says, yeah, they've made merchandise of men.
Mormons took over a whole state.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mormonism did. Utah. If he is asked, what about those that you wounded all around you by your hand, by your doing? God's going to say, you know, what about those that you hurt? For, you know, you're worthless. But what about those you hurt, that you wounded? And he will say, their crippling afflictions, their utter destruction came by way of my lover's house. He's speaking of Jezebel here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Yahweh was telling us the 2,000-year history of Christianity, and he began by telling the Ephesians, those in Ephesus, that you know, at least you didn't leave your first love for the false apostle. You didn't leave the teachings of the disciple Yahuchanan for the rantings of Paul. And then from there it goes from bad to worse. The Christianity becomes the seat of Satan. And then it's Jezebelian, married to the Lord, who is Satan. And then it's dead. But it's in that married to the Lord phase that it's true. They're in love with, they're enamored with the Lord, who is Satan.
Well, I thought he was pretty good. Baeth is, you know, is a standing person looking towards a house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you extrapolate from that, he's looking towards the house, but he's looking towards the mother church, the buildings, its love is obviously the institution. I think that's a good translation of that.
Yeah, that's true. So my lover's house, so his house would be his church. His house would be the mansion that he was able to build based upon making merchandise of men.
Yeah.
My lover's house. It's what I love. I love the church. Yeah, that their corruption came by way of my lover's house, the church, the Ohab, the house of love, as opposed to of lovers, as opposed to the house of Dode. The house of lovers. Isn't it true that in Christianity they paint their God as all loving?
Of course.
And don't they say that as Christians you're to love everyone?
That's the pitch.
It is the covenant of lovers and love, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But from Yahweh's point of view, what he just said here, that all love perspective has wounded all of those who have gathered around those false prophets who have made merchandise of men. Gets right back to, you know, what we need in this world is a little more hate and a little less love. Put in a position where we have to wonder, Kirk, as to the source of the name on the lover's house. Who owns the lover's house?
Correct.
Because the next statement is, they are burned by the sun and blinded. Against the Most High's shepherd, against the Most High's mighty individual, who is closely related to and associated with me, Yahweh says of the core of spiritual helpers. So we're talking about the house of the sun that has blinded them.
Yes.
Do you know of a organization that meets on Sundays?
Well, yes, the entire Christian world.
And what is their holiest day on their calendar? Would that be Easter Sunday?
Easter Sunday.
And the symbols of Christianity is the cross, which was the
equinox.
The sign of the equinox when they celebrate their Easter, when the sun, when it crosses the equator, is in the constellation of Taurus the bull.
The round wafer cakes.
Yeah, the round wafer cakes. Yeah, the halos over. Yeah, you look at
the arch.
If you look at a Catholic church, there's sunbursts everywhere. In fact, most Christian churches, there's sunbursts everywhere and halos everywhere.
So you've been to the Vatican, and there's the in the center of it, there's the right behind the altar, there's the big sunburst.
Right. Always. And when you look at Christianity's second biggest festival, it's on the winter solstice, when it's the birth of the sun of the sun again, when this day is becoming going longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty straightforward here that the house of the sun is Christianity. Being blinded by the sun, they're blinded by Christianity.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, if you're talking about Islam, it's mostly moon god worship, Allah, and all the symbols. We're all moon gods. So, he's not talking here about Islam. He's talking about Christianity. It's the only religion that incorporated virtually all of the symbols and doctrines associated with the sun. As a matter of fact, if you look at the principal designation, if you want to look at a building and say, that's a church, the thing you're going to see is a steeple, right?
Oh, yeah. Which is?
You know why the steeple's there?
Yeah, it's the symbol of where you catch the sun, the highest point. It's all sun-related.
Right. It's the first rays of the sunlight at the morning, and the last rays of the sun's light during the afternoon was in the steeple. It points up to their god, the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, all of this is sun god worship, including the Trinity, which is that tells the whole story of how sun god religions were first conceived.
Yeah, Mother Earth, the mother of the god, so
they were burned up by the sun, blinded against the Most High Shepherd. And so what he's saying here is that in Christianity, that the amalgamation of pagan religions that created Christianity have actually blinded the Christian of the Most High Shepherd from Yahusha. Thinking that they're following Jesus, they're actually blinded by their religion and don't see him. Don't see Yahusha. That's what he's telling us, and it's true. 100% of those who associate themselves as Christians and claim to be followers of Jesus are blinded by their religion and don't know the actual. Yosha, who Yahweh says is closely related to me. They don't know Yahweh. They don't know Yosha because they've been blinded by their religion.
You know, just for your critics, I spent many hours looking at 1 through 7, and from every source that I have readily available, and there's no translation flaw in this. I mean, this is what it says. It's not, you know, you may not take you hours to do it, you or whoever's out there, because I'm slow. But regardless, you could look this up, and this is not interpretation. This is, some of it is just right in your face, you know. You couldn't mistranslate this verse with these words if you
had to. No, it's God's telling us as clearly as words alive.
No, this ain't what it says. That's exactly what it says.
It's exactly what it says, yeah. And by the way, you don't need to do what you did. But I will tell you, if you do, you benefit from it. Because by doing it, you now are convinced. Because you know exactly what Yahweh said. And you own the material. Now you can speak about the material. You can incorporate the material into your own perspective. It enhances your understanding. It's a wonderful way to invest your time.